And now we return to Thursday's press conference with Russia's President Vladimir Putin, held in Moscow.
I suggest we take a combined approach. There was a question about children and the future in the right wing, and we have TV children, TV kids on the left. This is not the first year they're here at this press conference, so let's go to the right wing first. What's your question? Марина Валенкина, gifted children web portal. I would like to make a joke as well, like you did. 3 years ago, we had a baby, a gifted baby.
Well, thanks God, you know, thank God.
Of course, I'm kidding, because in 2014 at your press conference, you supported the idea to set up a national web portal for gifted children in Russia, and it is developing quite well. We, all the kids, they send greetings to you. 75 regions of Russia. So on January 1st, when we announced the competition to write essays about Russia in the future, we had 7 categories and we received 2,500 unique essays about the future of Russia. Excellent. We have 115 winners. And on the 19th, we will give awards to the winners. Okay, my question is, you asked, would you like to listen to those wonderful kids and hear what they think about the future of Russia? What do you say?
Well, let's do it. Do you want to bring in children?
No, it's January 19th. Could you please come to the award-giving ceremony in the Federation Council? We want these kids to tell you about their vision of the future of Russia.
Okay, I'll try to do it. Well, thank you. Please note it down in my schedule. Thank you for your work and thank you for your proposal.
Now, question from Teledetki. My name is Arina Zhukova and this is Kirill. We work together. We represent the TV channel Teledetki. Mr. President, how does the government support gifted children and how do you plan supporting them in the future? And does the government work together with prominent artists in this matter, scientists and so on and so forth? And do you have a vision of what these kids can become in the future if you invest a lot in them at this point? And one more question. We know that there is Sirius, a center that you helped set up. It is a center for gifted children from all over Russia. But there are kids who are equally gifted, but they were unable to get into Sirius. Is there anything you're doing for them?
As for talented kids, and kids in general, gifted children, I've said it multiple times, I believe that every child is gifted, is talented, and that's the job of the parents, that the job of the tutors, to unlock that potential. And again, it's not a hackneyed statement, you know. Cognitive science is right now doing such studies, and we do have those specialists who are conducting research like this into a cognitive area. You just mentioned this Sirius Center for Gifted Children. And you might have visited the media center in Sochi. It's the total size of 4 red squares. It's a huge one. So based on the media center, we would like to set up a several laboratories, world-class high-tech laboratories, and IT, biology and genetics, and cognitive science. Again, it's my initiative. And that lab on cognitive science will look into new techniques to work with gifted children to unlock their potential. We are working on that right now. So we'll definitely work on this in terms of science, And in terms of our practical work, you know, we are also developing the Ocean and the Artek and the Orlenok camps for children in the south of Russia. We're on all, right now we are establishing children's technoparks, the so-called quantoriums. We are now conducting the so-called Olympiads, special contest for children. So we really want to hope that all those gifted children would stay here in Russia, would find a job here in Russia. So again, the Sirius Center is a world-class one, and we, right near it we will have laboratories, and next to it we'll have the technoparks. So this will be the trio that will help to implement those ideas developed in Sirius in practice. They will work on commercializing those ideas. And there's a special course on retraining teachers from schools. So I hope that we would have such hubs in other regions of Russia. And this network is now emerging across Russia. Now, what's your question on pension age, on age of retirement? We won't forget about the army, mind you. We'll come to that, promise.
Hello, Mr. President. Zofia Sultanova-Chelninsky, Izvestia. People have been talking about increasing the retirement age, and we all understand that it's just a matter of time. When will you make this decision, and how much will you raise the retirement age for men and women?
Please sit down. You definitely raised a very sensitive, a very painful issue. It's an important one. I won't be able to give you the final decision because it's not ready. But the way you put it is as if the decision has been made already. Well, there are those in favor of increasing, raising the retirement age. And what is their argument? They said that, again, the retirement age that we have today was set in back in 1930s. And again, life expectancy was roughly the same as the retirement age that they set. It might be a paradox, but that was like this. Now, if you take European countries, including Belarus and Kazakhstan, and the same in Ukraine, they've taken that decision to raise the retirement age. We are the only outlier. So what is the argument of those who are in favor of raising the retirement age? They say that if we don't do this, given the increase in life expectancy, there will be more people, more and more people who have retired and less people who are able, able to work. Well, it might mean that we won't be able to pay enough pension. Well, that's not that won't actually happen. We will continue to make payments, but the income of retired will be frozen. I mean, the growth will be frozen, and given the inflation, their income would go down, actually. But, though, again, those who are in favor say that we should increase the retirement age in the same way for women and men alike. You know, there are, we do have women who give birth at 55. Those who are against raising the retirement age, they say that we need to transform our economy into the one that's based on high-tech and innovations. What it means? Now, you should be able to get the same result using 100 people instead of 1,000 staff members that we employ today. And if we increase the retirement age, what will we have to do with all those people? What will happen to the labor market? Where will all those people go? There are other arguments, and we just need to do a lot of calculations. And again, I'm giving you those arguments, those reasons, not in an attempt to dodge this question. We just need to think about every possible spillover effect. But again, it won't apply to all those people who have retired already. And number two, it shouldn't be some shock therapy solution. It shouldn't be a one-time solution. It should be a gradual, step-by-step. And again, no final decision has been taken as of today. And there's another important factor. You can't take that decision behind the scenes at the level of the government. It should be a transparent decision. We need to take into account the interests and the opinion of the people. And also, we need to debate that at the parliament.
Maybe take a few questions about sports. Sovietsky Sport is here, Match TV is here, and there was something anti-sport, Rodchenkov, and his life in Russia. Let's start with Match TV, but please keep it short. Ольга Богословская, Match TV, Mr. Putin. My question is related to sports, the situation with the IOC and WADA. How do you plan to communicate with these organizations? And this situation is extremely difficult. What is the way out of this situation?
Me and my colleagues mentioned it several times. It's quite obvious to us that it's a scandal that's being exaggerated ahead of the upcoming election event that we're having next year. I know about this, I'm sure about this, but again, we have to be frank about it. We are to blame ourselves. Indeed, there have been some instances when illegal substances were used. There have been other instances that were investigated in other countries as well, but you know, there have been no such scandals in other countries. So there is an attempt to politicize this issue. There are other systemic events in elite sports globally. You know, there are the so-called TOEs, therapeutic exemptions. You know, some athletes get competitive advantage based on those TOEs. So some athletes can take those substances, others are not allowed to. So maybe those who take those substances need to have a separate sports event. We need to have a level playing field. We need to have a competitive field. What about our ties? What about our relations with WADA and the IOC and other organizations? Well, we need to work in a constructive way. We need to defend the interests of our athletes, including in courts. Not sports courts, but ordinary courts. I know that many officials don't want that. But we'll have to support our athletes in civil courts to defend the rights and dignity of our athletes.
And let's take this question now.
Олег Лурье, Мир и Политика.
WADA's star witness is Григорий Родченков. In 2011, he and his sister were indicted for illegal trade in banned substances. And he gave guarantees to athletes saying that they would never get caught And then he attempted suicide, and he was in a psychiatric clinic for a while. So you can typical schizophrenic. And then a miracle started to happen. All of a sudden, he becomes a witness, and only one count was left out of 12, and the case was dropped, and he returned, and he was head of the director of this lab. And will they investigate his crimes? Why is he a witness now instead of a criminal? How can such a person, a suicidal person, why was he appointed the director of the lab?
Well, it's not a simple question. It's pretty strange, I agree. So he used to live in North America for a couple of years. He came over to Russia. Well, there's nothing strange about being appointed as a chief of the RUSADA. And I think his sister was convicted for 18 months for selling illegal substances. What is really strange for me, you know, I've been part of intelligence services. You know, he's been bringing that stuff from North America and Canada. But how has he been able to do that? How was he able to do that over so many years? What about the customs service? So we do have some questions. Well, that's the mistake of those people, those agencies that have that brought him over, that appointed him. You can't really appoint those people, people who have mental issues, people who have tried to commit suicide. But what did the IOC tell us? How did they prove their decision? They say that he's an honest person. He's also under the control of the FBI. He's protected by the FBI. And that everything is was laid out in his diaries. Well, that's really ridiculous. How do you know he's an honest person? Well, he says openly that money is the main thing for him. He's under the control of the FBI. Well, that's not an advantage. He works under the, under the guidance of the American intelligence services. He might be on substances himself, you know. They might be drugging him to say something. What about the diaries? When did he do that? How did he do that? Well, that's it. These are the three main planks of their argumentation. What about the scratches on those tubes? When did they appear? We don't know when. So we really respect international sports organizations of WADA and the IOC. We have a lot of friends there. We understand that it's difficult for them. They've been pressurized day after day. They've been intimidated. That's how it is. But even though they have forced to do something, you need to have some justification, some grounds for the decision. But so far, they've been not giving us enough. Back to your question, how did it happen that such a figure was head of RUSADA? That's a mistake. That's a mistake on the part of those who appointed. I know who did it. But, should we cry over spilled milk?
Question from Sovetsky Sport, Nikolai Yeremenko. Very brief. I'm not going to tell you that we are the oldest sports publication in Russia, because we know that you have a subscription for Sovetsky Sport. We know that Russia is very good at organizing major international sports events like the Olympics and so on. Next year, we'll have a very cool event. We are hosting the World Cup. We are all looking forward to it, and I know that everything will be fine. But we know that big cities like Moscow, St. Petersburg, Kazan, and Sochi, they already got some experience. They know how to host such events. But there are a few cities where even foreigners look exotic.
We do have a lot of experience, successful experience of holding major international sports events. I don't want to mention all of them. We've had the Confederations Cup. We conducted that at the highest level, and FIFA inspectors have been helping us. And everything is on track. We, as we know, we will have 12 stadiums. They need to be built in, they will be located in 11 cities. And out of those 12 stadiums, we do have one stadium where we have a 2-month delay. But nevertheless, we will do everything on time. Now, budget spending is less than half, so private money accounts for more than half of expenditures. But again, what we spend goes to developing the infrastructure, access roads, airports, roads, rail stations. So it's that infrastructure. I'm sure that everything will be top quality and will be delivered on time.
Let's take some questions from international media. ABC News.
Thank you, Mr. President. Terry Moran with ABC News. First, in the United States, investigations by Congress, the Department of Justice, and the media have uncovered a very large number of contacts between Russian citizens associated with your government and high officials of the Trump campaign. And some of those officials are now being prosecuted for lying about those contacts. All this is not normal. And many Americans are saying, where there's that much smoke, there must be fire. How would you explain to Americans the sheer number of contacts between the Trump campaign and your government? And second, if I may, it's almost been a year since Donald Trump has been elected president. You praised Donald Trump during the campaign. What is your assessment of Donald Trump as president after 1 year?
Спасибо. I'll start with the second part. It's not up to me to assess what Trump has been doing. It's up to those who have elected him. It's up to the American people. And there have been some major achievements, even in this short span of time. Look at the markets. The markets are up pretty strongly. That means that investors trust the American economy. That means they have a lot of confidence in it. It means that they trust the decisions by Trump. Certainly, we have a lot of respect for the opposition in the U.S., those who oppose Donald Trump, but, you know, that's an objective outcome. There have been some things that he had not been able to execute, like the healthcare reform. As for international relations, he's, you know, promised to improve relations with Russia. Even if he wanted to do that, he is not able to due to specific restrictions. But does he still have this decision? Maybe he doesn't have it. You have to ask him. But I really hope that he still has that desire, because it's in the interests of the Russian and American nations. I hope that we will overcome shared threats, terrorism, environmental issues. I hope we can work together on them. Weapons of mass destruction, proliferation, and the Middle East, North Korea, another issues. There are other issues where we can work much better when we work jointly. Well, that's pretty much it.
How would you explain it to Americans?
I see. Значит, вы знаете, ну это все придумано.
Well, that's been brought in by the nose, you know. That's been invented by those who are in the opposition.
Для того, чтобы
people who oppose President Trump
его работе нелегитимный характер.
To delegitimize his time in office.
Как будто без понимания того, что
you know, it really seems strange to me because they don't understand. It seems that they don't understand. They undermine their own nation. They limit the powers of the president who has been elected. It means that they don't have respect for those people, that those Americans who elected Donald Trump. Well, any election campaign, take any election campaign in the world, should we stop? Should we ban any contacts? Our ambassador was accused of meeting someone, but that happens everywhere. That's general practice when diplomats and even members of government meet with every candidate, with their campaign, they discuss some issues, they discuss prospects of development when they're trying to figure out what those people will do when and if they come to power. What's so particular about it? What's so strange about it? Why do you think there's, why do you have this spy hysteria, Russian meddling hysteria? So take the investigation on social media. Well, the ads that Russian companies purchased is worth like 0.1 or something percent compared with huge numbers by American companies. So you can't just compare it. But even to some, it seems that it's way too much. And take the situation with the Russian media, like RT and Sputnik. Their share and the total information market is really tiny compared to what global Russian American media have been doing globally and here in Russia. So what about the freedom of press? The main tenet of the US democracy. Well, some are more successful, some are less successful. You just need to do your homework to draw the right conclusions. We shouldn't attack each other. So let's think about it and let's draw the right conclusions. Okay, let's move to the other wing, TVC, TV Network. Thank you. Lilia Akinshina, TV Center. I have a question on the economy, just like as you asked. I have a question on the monetary policy of the central bank. You said we are enjoying a unprecedented low inflation and the key interest rate has gone down, but the central bank is still being criticized. One of the main trends was inflation targeting, and you know, there have been many skepticists, but you know, the central bank has achieved that, but the debate still rages on. Some economists say that what is good for the average consumer, like low inflation, might mean, if not death, but not a very healthy situation for producers, for the economy in general. So do you feel that this policy of inflation targeting has been successful? How fair is the criticism coming from the production sector that they don't have free money enough?
Targeting inflation is the right thing to do. If we want our economy to be healthy, if we want investors to trust us, We definitely have to do this. This is a we need to have a balanced budget, and we need smart monetary policy, and this is what the central bank does.
You can.
Can I understand the criticism coming from businesses? Yes, of course, they would like to get cheaper loans. But the thing is, we need to balance everything in a smart way. We need to avoid having bubbles in our economy. When there is a lot of cheap money available, you invest it in something undeserving, you deserve this money into companies that don't have guaranteed demand. Look at what has been happening in recent years. The central bank reduced the interest rate from 11% to 10%, and this year they reduced the rate 5 times. Currently, the interest rate is 8.25%. And the central bank has demonstrated their goals by year 2020. They want to bring the interest rate down to 6 or 7% as the interest rate goes down. This is an important factor, of course, but it's not the only dynamic. There are also commercial rates. The average commercial rate for non-financial institutions is, I think, 10.08%. For small and medium enterprises, of course, it's higher, 13 to 14%, I believe, if not more. What else does the central bank do? They made a decision to restructure banking institutions with the so-called general license, allowing them to work with major partners, major businesses. They have to have their at least $1 billion in assets. Then there is the basic license. Banks with operating with a basic license should have at least $300 million in assets. Those banks will work with SMEs in the provinces. So I think we still have a large number of banks. I think 521 banks in Russia. And it's not like we need to get rid of them, but we need to make sure that our system is healthy in the interest of their clients. In case of volatility, in case of volatility on international markets, or there are some difficult situations within the country, we don't want clients to suffer. We don't want clients to face problems that cannot be resolved. We have two ways in which we help the banking system to rehabilitate. There is the DFA, and then there is another fund we set up recently, DIA, and when we introduce administration for banks through this second fund, money that comes from the bank and goes to the owners, executives of the bank, those people will not get any money from this fund. I think this was a very important decision. And one other thing I would like to stress, because I keep hearing those criticisms about the central bank. People say that the central bank is actually increasing government's involvement in the banking sector. Well, this is not true. Like I said, we have 521 banks, and we have other financial institutions apart from banks. And the central bank, what they say is, even if they establish control over certain banks, their ultimate goal is to make those banks private again, give them into private hands. Okay, let's keep it quiet. There was a question about agriculture. So what's the question about agriculture? Agriculture.
Елена Агамян from Siberia. We had a bumper crop this year. But unfortunately, it seems no one needs that. The government this year decided they will not conduct any interventions. We have a lot of crop in our storage, taking it outside of Siberia. It's very difficult logistics-wise, you know. It's really difficult to transport it either to Moscow or to Vladivostok. And, you know, our farmers sell crop at half the price. We are ready to move towards diversification. We are ready to grow other crops too, but it's really hard to understand what the country really needs, what the demand will be tomorrow. May we go back to central planning system once again? Maybe there are other, you know, models where you would get bumper crop and then bumper or record losses.
Well, you're saying they sell their crops at half the price. We have to be clear, which price are you talking about? The price they want to get for their products or the market price? Of course, we need to support grain producers, and there are different ways to do that. We can use a government procurement program, and we have to consider that. I'm not ruling this out. Even though the government is against it, I think we can still think about it. But we definitely agreed with the government that we'll subsidize rail transportation costs. I'm not sure if the decision has been made, but we have to make it. This applies to transportation in general and food transportation in particular.
Gazeta.ru, an online outlet. Gazeta.ru, Rustem Falyakhov. I have a question on the economy. Vladimir, Mr. Putin, based on your replies, I have an impression that you're often misinformed by your assistants. Well, what about taxes? Will we see an increase in taxes in 2018 and further on? The business community and people hope that there's a freeze ahead of the election, and then we will see a wave of new taxes or tax hikes. So what do your assistants report to you? What will happen to taxes?
Well, I don't agree with you about me being misinformed about taxes. I agree that the burden is increasing, including non-tax burden. As you know, I've given instructions to the government to review the situation in different parts of Russia, and we will certainly do that. And in the future, we'll create conditions that would prevent this unlimited and unbridled growth of tax burden. And you're right that the businesses, they don't care which taxes in particular they pay, as long as they lose their money. And we have agreed that taxes will not be increased until the end of 2018, and we have been committed to that, and we've delivered on this promise. You can argue on some of the points, but for key taxes, we have been able to honor this commitment. What will happen after 2018? Like I said, we've set key areas like education, healthcare, high tech, strengthening our military, but we need sources for all that, sources of funding. And we're thinking hard where to get cash for all those projects. How can we readjust our taxation system to make sure that it works efficiently? What kind of tax maneuver we need in order to make the situation easier for the sectors that we want to develop fast? faster. At this point, it would be premature to talk about this issue, I think, because this is the kind of subject where you have to consult with experts first, and then, once you make a decision, you have to discuss it with the business community, and we will certainly do that. We will not make this decision behind closed doors, just like we do with other issues, like raising the retirement age. But there is one thing I can tell you right now, for sure, something we need to pay close attention to. There are certain taxes that are quite a heavy burden for people and businesses, and they don't really serve the interests of the people, businesses, or the nation in general. For example, capital repairs or debt that's been accumulated over years, and sometimes it's not even your own fault. It's just because our taxation system is imperfect. You may have accumulated a huge debt, and this affects 42 million people, and the total volume of this debt is 41 billion. Some people will not be happy with me, my liberal opponents, I mean, but I think we should release people from this debt, and we should do this without any bureaucratic procedures. People don't have to go to the tax inspectorate. That's number one. Number two, we should do the same for self-employed people, and that's another 15 billion rubles in debt, and it affects 2.9 million people, about 3 million people. You start your own business, but things don't go the way you planned, and you get further and further in debt in taxes. So we need to relieve people from this burden of unpaid taxes. I can tell you that you're happy about this decision, and I agree with that. Number three, we need to readjust the system in such a way that we stimulate taxpayers. Even if they miss on a payment, they should not be afraid of contacting the tax inspector. Of course, we need discipline with the tax collection, but we shouldn't be strict about it as well. And there is another thing we need to do. There is another situation we need to pay close attention to. I'm talking about the so-called conditional incomes, conditional revenue. For example, certain banks, they may forgive you your debt, or there are cell operators, cell carriers who can forgive you certain debt. This is also called conditional income, and you are required to pay taxes for that as well, and this runs into billions. It's totally meaningless, and we should write off those debts as well, because it just stands in the way of economic development. This is not fair. That's unfair burden. And I think very soon we'll do that.
Now, a question from the city of Ufa. Stanislav Shakhov, Ufa. I have a follow-up question on taxes. Every region is struggling to get money from the federal government. So roughly, we get 100 billion in taxes, then we send it to the federal government, and then we try to get back as much as we can. So could we possibly use more money, like 5% of the mining tax, for example? We need that for the roads, we need that for other projects.
There are a few options we're looking at, but I'm not going to get into specifics, even though it's no secret that we discussed those issues just last week. We talked about road construction, and we talked about local revenue. You know that we made the decision to restructure debts for provinces. Does anybody else have a question about different regions and their debts? Let's combine those questions together.
Великий Новгород, ваши новости онлайн outlet. Our region certainly requires a lot of money from the federal budget. We are struggling to get money for healthcare, education. We have a 2 billion ruble debt, which is almost the same as the revenues that our budget has. So how can we really live? How can we survive? How can we adopt a budget of opportunities, not a budget of desperation? So how can we rebalance the situation between the donor regions and the deficit regions so that people across Russia could live equally well? So restructuring that you just mentioned, could it be one of the tools to resolve this issue? And may I hand it over to you? I've been doing research for 3 years on deficit in financing kindergartens. So here are some pictures of the situation in kindergartens across Russia.
Okay, I have to answer this question first, because this is really related to the previous question from Ufa and the question from Novgorod. There are donor regions and subsidized regions. We believe that wherever people live, they have to live in approximately equal conditions. Of course, we know that it's hard to do that because different regions develop differently for a variety of reasons. But people who live in self-sufficient, who live in regions that need subsidies, it's not their fault. So what we've been doing throughout the years is we've been trying to put everybody on a level playing field. For example, there are parts of Russia, the whole country, the whole nation contributed to develop those parts. Even those regions that require subsidies today. So it's only fair to redistribute some of the wealth. And we have about 12 donor regions today. So we will redistribute some of the money. Of course, we should do this carefully. We should not undermine those donors' desire to develop further. Now on restructuring, I think I said this publicly, and the government made a public announcement. A decision has been made to restructure the debt of almost all the regions of the Russian Federation for the 7 years, for the next 7 years, at 5% interest. Regions which can increase tax collection above inflation will get this delay for 12 years instead of 7. This will enable those regions to benefit 430 billion rubles, and they should use this money first to improve their financial situation and second to develop economically and socially. I think it is extremely important, and all the provinces were extremely encouraged by this news, including Novgorod. Regions like Novgorod will receive additional support. I'd like to emphasize this additional, in addition to what I just mentioned. And we don't have that many regions who require this kind of assistance, just 3 or 4 for the entire country, but Novgorod is one of them. And this aid will amount to billions of rubles. I think it is very important. This decision has not yet been made, and I have not even discussed this with the government yet. We should stop this unlimited growth of credit where regions of Russia take out loans from commercial banks at a very high interest. You know, you can, if you can get a loan from a government bank, they don't do this. So immediately I have this question, why? Maybe there is some collusion between local authorities and a commercial bank. There are certain parameters where commercial banks don't give loans to companies, to businesses, if they're in debt. But they easily give loans to regions, even though they're deep in debt. Why? Because they know that the federal government will always help them. So we need to institute certain limits there. I have not discussed this with anybody yet, but I mention it now. We'll have to do something about this.
Associated Press.
Kate DePuri, Associated Press.
With your permission, I will ask a question in English.
The U.S. wants Russia to do more to persuade North Korea to halt its missile programs. Would Russia support tougher sanctions against North Korea? And do you think that cooperation on North Korea could warm up U.S.-Russia relations, or have you lost hope of mending them under Mr. Trump? Thank you.
Интересные вы ребята.
You're interesting people.
Вы
really?
Не обратили внимания, что ваши,
have you noticed,
значит, конгрессмены,
that your congressmen,
сенаторы,
your senators, they look so well, so nice, so handsome. They have ties and shirts, and they seem to be smart people, but they put us on the same shelf with the North Korea and Iran. And at the same time, they ask the U.S. president to address the issues of North Korea and the Iranian nuclear program together with us. Are you? Are you okay? It just looks weird. It just doesn't make much sense.
Наша политика.
Anyway,
в отличие от политики некоторых стран,
our policy, unlike that of certain other countries, is not nearsighted. We don't look at our immediate goals. We do our best to work with everybody on critical security issues. We don't get offended, we don't act arrogant, we don't hold any grudges, even when some people make certain decisions. As far as North Korea is concerned, we, you know, our position, we don't recognize North Korea as a nuclear state. We think that all the things happening there are counterproductive. I would like to repeat that basically there was an agreement between with North Korea that in 2005 that they will suspend their nuclear program, and they've made certain commitments, and everybody was happy. We all agreed and signed this agreement. Then a few months later, the United States decided to go beyond this agreement. And they froze their assets, their bank accounts of North Korea, and they said that North Korea should do something in addition to this agreement, something that goes beyond that agreement. And North Korea then withdrew from this agreement and relaunched its nuclear program. Why did you do that? This agreement was not enough. Why did you sign this agreement if you thought this was not enough? You provoked North Korea to withdraw from this agreement. And then it was even worse. There was Libya and Iraq. I've mentioned this many times. To North Korea, this is the only way of self-preservation. They have to have WMDs and missiles, and now they have a missile that can reach the United States.
Apparently. So what good came out of it? We think both sides should stop escalating the situation. So I think we heard from the United States that they would stop military drills. No, they have another military exercise, and North Korea responded by launching another missile. You have to stop at a certain point. You have to stop this from spiraling. This is extremely dangerous, and we told the United States about this. Even if you suppose that the United States launch some kind of strike against North Korea, even if it's conventional weapons, if it's high-precision missiles, where are you going to strike? Does the CIA know specifically which targets they have to hit? With no, of course not. North Korea is a closed country. There are things you may know about it and things that you certainly don't know. And just if North Korea launches its missiles, consequences will be catastrophic. Yes, we know that there was an instance when the United States used nuclear weapons. There was that one instance when the U.S. used nuclear weapons against Japan. And even back then, I think it was unwarranted. But now, this will be extremely, extremely dangerous if they do that with North Korea. Well, we heard a recent statement from Rex Tillerson, and this is really encouraging. I think there has been some shifts with the State Department, maybe with the CIA intelligence services. If we all proceed from common sense, if we all act like this, of course we will cooperate with the United States on all issues, including North Korea. Okay, there was a question from Bashkiri, and I think Ukraine is not far from Russia as well, so let's take a question from Ukraine now.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. Well, Ukraine is far away from Bashkortostan. We only we're only acquainted with Burat. So you don't always reply to all of my questions. So you didn't hide the fact that you were sending some of the servicemen to Donbass, and what we mean is that they kill Ukrainian citizens. We know what we have to do with them. Some are killed, but some get jailed in Ukraine. Some are taken prisoners. Well, do you want to swap your citizens? And it's not that difficult, because Ukrainians don't leave their men behind. We want to get back our 65 people. And it's not just Mr. Sentsov, there's dozens of Crimean Tatars. If you win the election, perhaps, in case, will you continue to pursue this absurd policy on the so-called peacekeepers? No, those who are there, appointed by you, they are conducting a massacre. You know, you might remember Slavyansk and Mariupol. You know, they've been liberated by the Ukrainian army and they live a free and flourishing life.